Chapter 2. Man stands powerless before elevator. By the time I reached the middle of chemotherapy, I had many of the side effects that people suffer under such circumstances, but I could still keep doing some things as before. I kept on teaching, although only one day a week, for which I had to get fairly well doped up on painkillers. The only things I told my seminar students were not to come to class if they had a cold, and to leave a few empty seats between them and me at the seminar table. People knew, of course. There was no hiding the light fuzz residue around my skull after most of my hair had fallen out. Women have a slight advantage here. The hospital has women's wigs available for rent. When I passed my colleagues in the hall, I could see them wince. Usually they wouldn't say anything. We had lost a senior colleague to cancer one year earlier, and now our longtime department secretary was in the last stages of breast cancer. What could they say? I kept thinking of another verse from the Psalms. My friends and companions stand back at the sight of my affliction. Even those closest to me keep their distance. Psalm 38, verse 12. I'm not sure what my colleagues were thinking. Outsiders often expect comedy writers to always see the funny side of everyday life, and judges to be equally judicious in and out of court. And I suppose professors of religion to find some religious aspect to what they happen to encounter. But of course none of these is usually the case. Most people, when they see someone ravaged by chemotherapy, just tend, like the people in Psalm 38, to keep their distance. And I suppose that my colleagues, experts in ancient and medieval religion, were no exception. Fear also plays a role. That could happen to me, is rarely spoken, but often thought. If people do talk to you about your condition, they usually get around to asking you what your first symptoms were. This could be useful information, after all. Some are also eager to discover something in your family history, or some aberrant feature of your diet or daily regimen that can be blamed for your catastrophe, while leaving them in the clear. All this, I am afraid, is merely human. The sufferer, too, tends to leave his profession behind. The comedian, the judge, and even the medical doctor react, at least after a while, in no special way. They just sink into that passive state of patienthood shared by other sufferers. So I have no real explanation why, during this difficult time, I kept getting back to the matter of religion. I don't mean its practice, but the whole idea of religion, and in particular what it had to do with the state of mind described in the previous chapter, that feeling of the background music stopping, and the sense of smallness, of discreetness that accompanied it. No one knows how or when religion began. For the last 200 years or so, books on the subject have usually begun by noting that no utterly religionless society has ever been observed, not in bygone days by European explorers pushing at the edges of Asia and Africa.